Good evening, everyone. This is the NLA Hams Net. It happens every week at on a Wednesday. You okay?
Sorry.
Sorry.
That's the dryer.
We have we have this NLA Hams Net every week at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and everyone is invited to participate, whether you're a member of the NLA or whether you're not. You're a ham, either one. I am Terry. I am K-I-0-R-E. I live in Colorado. And these conference calls are recorded up on the NLA website, which I understand is unavailable at the moment, but you can come back and listen to them if you want. Tonight, I wanted to relate an experience while I try and call up the book we've been looking up. I just got home. My apologies to everyone. It took a little longer to give my brother one of the wings to my old airplane. And I crashed and broke my back on about 6 years ago. However, last weekend we had a ham fest. Now, everybody understands the ham part, that's radio operators. But the fest is kind of like a big garage sale for ham radio operators. Well, that sounds cool. What do you think you'd find at a ham fest?
You know, there's a potentially interesting topic here, Terry, if you don't mind. I'm not sure what you floated around in most, whether it was your Quicksilver or your other plane, but you might talk about using your ham gear in the aircraft if you did, the coverage you might get, stuff like that.
Well, the higher you get, the better off you are. I have used it. Usually in an airplane, though, there's so much noise that you got to get special hookups so that your noise canceling or your really good earphones can knock down enough noise where you can hear people talk. I also tried to use my ham radio to talk on the AM bands, but I couldn't get anybody to understand me. It didn't work very well because I did a mod, but it didn't work like it was supposed to. So I never could get it to work like it should. So anyway, I don't get a lot that way. But on the I don't know what you're looking for, Jen. The higher you get your antenna, the better off you are. In Colorado, we have these big, really tall towers called mountains, and you can get up on top of those, and you can talk all the way to the horizon with very little power. It's amazing what you can do with them. So lots of times it's just getting the high spot. I have done Simplex in a high spot in Broomfield and talked to Cheyenne. So it's not easy, but it's doable, and it wasn't quite Cheyenne because the guy lives up on the hill south of Cheyenne, and so it's a little harder to get down into Cheyenne. Repeaters help a lot, but then again, you got to be able to hit the repeater. Does that answer your question, Jan? Am I still on the call? Is anybody else out there?
Sorry, I was muted for a moment.
Jan muted himself to turn the dryer on.
Yeah. you should have had a lighter than aircraft, Terry. They're quite quiet and dirigible.
Oh, yeah, they are. And, yeah, you can use ham radio anywhere you can fire it up and be able to hear who you're talking to. Doesn't work very well to not be able to hear people because then you don't know when the channel, or not the channel, but the frequency is clear, so that you can use it.
True. Anybody have a dirigible? Be a neat thing to have
for a hot air balloon.
Yeah. Of course, as long as they're not don't have the burner lit off. Light off the burner, it gets pretty loud.
Yeah, for just a minute. I want to encourage your buddy to get with their local ham clubs. Let's see. What else do I need to say? You know what? We're getting into telecommunications and digital signals on here, and that's way more than what it needs for the technician.
Right.
I did want to cover something that you do need to know for the test. I'm on page 7-14 of the ARRL manual, technician manual, and table 7-5 kind of lists most of the stuff you can talk on as a technician. And it goes from HF 80 meters, which is pretty low, all the way up to UHF 23 centimeters. Now, remember that frequency and wavelength, that's the wavelength that I gave. 80-meter wavelength is about 4.0 megahertz. The ham bands, when you look at the whole spectrum, the ham bands are these narrow little slits here and there, and they're usually multiples of each other. Like 80 meters, the ham portion is 3.5 to 4.0 megahertz. Well, if you think about that, 3.5 times 2, and you're into the 40 meters, which is 7 megahertz to 7.3 megahertz. And not everybody adheres to that, because in some of the other countries, their stations right where you want to transmit in the 40-meter band at like 7.15, seems like 7.25, one of those. There's a station on there that's always up, and it's just blaring out, and so you can't use that much. But lots of times, they reserve a portion of the band for CW only. Now, does anybody remember what CW means?
Continuous wave.
Very good. So when you hear CW, think Morse code. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. No, that's not da-da-da-da-da. It's da-da-da. Yeah, da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da-da. That's CW. Morse code. So in the 80 meter band, 3.525 to 3.6 megahertz is reserved for CW only. In 40 meters from 7.0 to 7.3 megahertz, you can only do CW between 7.025 and 7.125. Some of these you have to just memorize as for the technician class, you almost have to memorize some of these frequencies. And what I used to do is get my kids, and I'd give them the sheet of paper, and I'd say, ask me any question. And then they would ask me some kind of strange question, and I would try and come up with a frequency that they wanted. But this memorization, more than anything else. So it doesn't help for me to read it or tell you. It helps for you to kind of see. Going up 15 meters is 21 to 21.45 megahertz. 10 meters is 28 to 29.7 megahertz. And the CW, or the citizen's band, is just below that in frequency, from what I remember. Continuing on, the VHF, UHF, 6 meters. 6 meters is 50 to 54 megahertz. 2 meters is 144 to 148 megahertz. 1.25 meters is the 220 megahertz band. It's 220, really 222 to 225 is phone image, RTTY data, and CW. And then there's a fixed digital message forwarding system only between 219 and 220. So there's all kinds of exceptions there. 70 centimeters is your 420 to 450 megahertz. And there's some reserve space there because they reserve portions of it for repeaters, specific frequencies for repeaters. And it's different in different states. Some repeaters are spaced at about 100 kilohertz, and some are spaced at about 150 kilohertz, and it depends on what state you're in a lot of times. And then there's that line A thing we briefly talked about before. That's not available from 420 to 430 north of line A, from 420 to 430, but the rest of it's good. And then 435 to 438 is reserved for satellite communications. And the reason that that's on there is because satellites are going up, and they're between 150 to 250 miles up most of the time. Well, you almost have to have a Yagi antenna to communicate with them. You can hear them, but it's tough to communicate with them and send your own signal up there if you just have an HT. I've heard people do it with a Yagi. So when people say, well, you're only going to get out about 10 miles with that radio, no, it depends on how good your antenna is and how smart you are with what you do on your radio and how you transmit. Then 33 centimeters is 902 to 928 megahertz. And you notice these bands get a little wider as we get up, and that's because usually you're up into FM. It requires a little bit wider frequency bandwidth to transmit on a particular frequency. And then 23 centimeters is 1240 megahertz, which is 1.24 gig, to 1300 megahertz, which is 1.3 gig. And that's a lot of bandwidth. You know, when you think about it, that's, 60 megahertz? That's a pretty wide band. But usable, quite usable. And you're allowed to do just about anything you want. Most of these say phone, image, RTTY, which they call RATI, data, and CW. And there's multiple data modes. You got to get a table, and there's a way to find one on the internet. This same table, you can go to ARRL, and it'll show you the band, the ham bands. You do have some power limits. In the UHF, VHF UHF says it's 1500 watts PEP. And what is that, Jan? Something peak effect rate, effective power, or something like that. I can't remember. And in HF, you're limited 200 watts. That's a lot. That's a lot. And, you know, the more power you have, the more it's going to cost you. Peak envelope power, that's what that stands for. So it's kind of like an average over an envelope. Peak envelope power. Peak envelope power is the average power during one RF cycle of the radio signal at the very peak of a modulating waveform, such as for speech. For CW signals, PEP is measured during the key down period in which the transmitter is on. When you're doing CW, your signal is either there or it's not there. And so when you key it down, your modulation is whether the carrier is there or it's not there. If the carrier is there, they can hear you. And the tone is created because When they receive it, they mix it with another audio frequency, and it comes out with the beep, beep, beep. So your carrier is either there or it's not, and that's why it's easy to do CW once you learn how to do it. And I think it's when other methods don't work, CW will get through. But you got to have somebody listening. So everything else requires some specific type of modulation, either AM, FM, PSK, phase shift keying, and then it gets into a whole bunch more quadrature and more on and on and on. There's lots of different things. Up in the UHF band, you can actually send television signals. We have one here. There's a television repeater that uses, cable channels, correct me if I'm wrong, 55, 56, 57, something along those lines, they are in the UHF band. And so we've got a repeater here that's in Boulder up on one of the mesas that if you can hit the repeater, you can send out a TV signal, and it goes out to all the hams that are listening. Pretty slick. So every Wednesday night, they do a TV off of that, and different hams try to show different things that they've learned. Okay. Does anybody have any questions?
Red floor, and I just traveled, so I'm muted out. That's all.
Can you say again, Greg? I couldn't understand what you said.
I said I'm just traveling, so I'm just going to be muted and listening.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Can you go into how you set up for these FSK-type modes and things like that a little bit? We hear reference to them from time to time, but the actual implementation is never really discussed.
You have to learn. Huh? You have to get down and look at what they use is a what's called a TNC, a terminal network controller, and that converts the text into something like X.25, which is a way of packetizing. So there's layers of protocols that are used. And X.25 is a nice one because it's packet. It packetizes things. And you lay that on top of PSK, and a TNC does that for you. So you type up a message and hit send, and the TNC will change that into packetized and then send it out over the PSK. Phase shift keying requires another piece of equipment that sits between your computer and the radio and sends out a signal that other stuff listening can hear. And it's packet radio is what it is. They call it packet.
Right.
There's other ones, and I'm not very good at those because I haven't done them a whole lot. Kind of thin on that. You're getting towards the edge.
Okay. I remember walking by the radio room on board ship. And at that time, you know, eons ago in the dark ages, they had punch paper tape, I think it was. And they'd have everything all typed up in the tape punch, and they'd throw that on, and away it went, you know? Just like that.
Yes. Your paper tape codes a single character on each set of holes, so the characters are across the tape. And when
right.
It lines up, there's some little fingers that read what number or is on the tape, and it reads as ASCII, and then it just turns that into a packet and then sends it out. And it's mm-hmm. not much different than what a teletype is.
Right.
I went to a ham fest, and it was called Mark Fest, the Longmont Amateur Radio Club. Hamfest, and it was held at the Boulder Fairgrounds last weekend. And just so everybody has an idea, when you go to a Hamfest, there's a lot of hams in there. It might cost you $5 to get in. They usually do testing at these things, but the testing might be in a different building, so it's nice and quiet. But you have people that rent tables, and then they sell whatever they have. And it's usually old ham gear, or it could be newer stuff. Maybe it's antennas that people have made, and they're ready to sell it at a big discount. I've bought all kinds of stuff at Hamfest before. I didn't buy anything this week because I didn't see anything I need, and I don't need to accumulate anything else. But if you're looking to have a little bit of fun, I saw some HF radios for less than $300. So there's another way to get on the air. So you can look up Hamfest on the Internet and see if there's going to be one close to you, and just go look. I would encourage you to go look. Start up a conversation with some of these guys. Some of them were dressed in uniforms because they are associated with organizations that aid the sheriff or some club that maintains a repeater. There's a whole subculture out there for ham radio, and they have some really slick stuff nowadays that didn't have when I became a ham. Okay. I don't know. I'm looking around at anything that might be good to have, and I see a lot of stuff that you need to know, but until you sit down and read it in the book, you're going to have a tough time. So let's just hit some of those things. Operating regulations, Chapter 8 in the ARRL Ham Radio License Manual, the one with all the questions in the back. There's an idea about what a control operator is, and a control operator is somebody who has control of the transmitter. Anybody can listen to any of this stuff. In an emergency, anybody can use any ham radio to call for help. They need it, if they need it, in any kind of emergency. But normally, you need a control operator. If you have a ham license, then you are the control operator, and what goes out over the air, you are responsible for if you're the ham operator. You're responsible for what happens, and you're responsible to see that it that your transmissions abide by the rules the FCC has laid out. And you have to have a license to do that. You can transfer your control operator to another station as long as they have a ham license, so a guest operator can come over and operate your station even when you're not there, as long as they have a ham license and they're obeying according to their license level. You can't operate only in a like an amateur extra if all you have is a technician license. So maybe I've got an amateur extra license. I can operate on some frequencies that technicians can't. But if I let you come over and use my radio, you have to stay within what level of license you have, not the one I have. Make sense to everybody? Holler if it doesn't. When you have unlicensed operators, in other words, somebody comes over and they want to talk. This has been done quite a lot at times during the wars. Ham operators on HF would establish a contact with somebody overseas, and maybe they would establish a time on this date at this time. you could go to a particular place where there was a ham radio operator over wherever you were stationed, and a ham operator local could talk, and they would establish a connection and allow you, so like a serviceman, to talk to his family who came to that other ham operator's location where he had all the equipment. And that's called third-party communications. You can hold the mic for an unlicensed operator, but the ham operator, the control operator, is still responsible for what is transmitted off of his station. So you have to be careful. And it has to be you talk, then you listen. Then you talk, then you listen. You let the other person talk. So it's called simplex communications. In most cases, identification. Normal identification. The first rule of identification is that the unidentified transmissions are not allowed, no matter how brief. Now, you see, you get a lot of people, and I want to discourage this. You get a lot of people that they want to see if they can hit the repeater. So they key up, and then they let go, and the repeater replies and gives you a squelch tell, a courtesy beep, and then maybe identifies itself. Well, you transmitted, but you didn't identify yourself. So I want to encourage everybody that if you're going to try and do that, then give your call sign. This is KI0RE, listening on this repeater, and then see if the repeater answers you. That way you're covered. Transmitting without identification is a no-no. And how often do you identify yourself? The FCC requirement is every 10 and at the end. So if you can remember every 10 and at the end, you're in business. And what that means is every 10 minutes you have to identify your station and at the end of your transmission. Well, if all you're doing is kerchunking the repeater, which is what that's called, just by pushing your transmit key and see if you have the repeater, that's the end of your communications. You need to say as if that was the only thing you wanted to do. So you need to say KI0RE testing, and then you're done. So every 10 and at the end. Tactical call signs. As a general rule, you don't use tactical call signs. You want to avoid using any codes on the amateur radio frequencies. Now, that isn't always adhered to because you are allowed to have a tactical call sign. When I go out and I help at, say, a bike ride, I help with the bike MS. It's a bike ride. It's 150 miles on 2 days during a weekend in June or July. And people go out and they get sponsorships and they ride their bike and they get paid a dollar for every mile they go or 20 cents for every mile they ride. And we have tactical call signs. So I might be running a rest area and maybe I'm running rest area 4. And so they will call me instead of trying to come up with my call sign. They'll say, rest 4, this is rest logistics. And I'm expected to answer. And you answer is rest logistics, this is rest 4, go ahead. And so they tell me what they want, whatever the message is, and I handle the traffic and I pass it on to whoever's in charge of that rest area. But at the end of my transmissions, to show that I'm done with the channel, we got our communication done and the information has been exchanged properly, I say KI0RE, and whoever called me, Rest Logistics, they give their call sign also. And when you hear that call sign, you know the channel is back open and anybody else can use it. Another thing that you get sometimes is you have what's called a net control. Now, we started out when we did our first few here, we had a net control. That was me. And I'm still doing that loosely, but I don't adhere to it exactly. If we're on the radio, I'd have to because of the physics. I can't hear what anybody else is saying if I don't unkey. So I unkey a lot more than I do here so that I can listen. But a net control, there's directed and undirected net. An undirected, anybody can talk at any time. A directed net says everybody, if they want to talk, they don't just start talking to the one they want to talk to. They call net control. And net control says, okay, you go ahead and call your traffic. And you talk whatever you want. And so what that would be is like rest logistics. I'm rest 4. I want to talk to rest logistics because I need ice. So I would say net control rest 4. And then net control would say rest 4, go ahead with traffic. And then I'd say I want to call rest logistics. And he'd say, go ahead with your traffic. And I'd say, I'd call rest logistics, and I would talk. And then I would say, K-I-0-R-E, thank you. And I'd be, I'm off. And he would say whatever his call sign is. And then net control has control again. So it's all very regimented. And the idea is to keep your communications short, direct, and listen more than you talk. And that sounds much easier than what it is when you have that microphone in your hand, you're ready to key up. Don't want to scare anybody, but you need to be ready for that. You got to think about it. Mm-hmm. Anybody got any questions?
Good idea. Not at the moment.
Question? I'm sorry?
Not at the moment.
Okay. You can have automatic transmissions. When you first use a repeater, one of the things that you might hear, it depends on how the repeater is set up, but you might hear what's called a courtesy beep. Courtesy beep says, I'm a repeater, and I was listening to this transmission, and then it quit. And so what you'll hear is, this is KI0RE, beep. And if you were listening to a repeater, that would tell you that KI0RE just unkeyed, and the repeater said, I lost that carrier. The repeater's open again. And it's kind of nice to have. You don't always get those. And one of the ways you can tell is a squelch tail, because most repeaters, they will go for a second or two in case your thumb just got tired or you slipped off the repeat station, you came right back in. They'll go for a second or two, and then you have what's called a squelch tail. I don't know whether to go in this or not, but does anybody know what squelch is? Anybody that doesn't know what squelch is, let's answer. As let's ask it that way. Please tell me so I can explain squelch.
You have live
ammunition. And then let's deal with something.
Screech.
That I don't like. What?
Screech.
Screech. a squelch says there's always background noise. Most of the static you hear on a TV set or on a radio is background noise actually from the Big Bang, and it's just wandering around out there. You may be hearing the throes of signals that are coming from the other side of the world, but they're unintelligible now, and they're just background noise. that noise can be irritating after a while. Anybody who is married to a ham and is not the ham themselves will be familiar with what I'm talking about, especially on HF. There's a noise floor, and it's always crackling and hissing and... And what you do is you turn your squelch to that so that it just goes away. And then when there's an actual signal, all of a sudden, the power of the signal puts you just over the squelch, and you hear it. And usually it's enough to where you don't hear the noise floor because somebody's talking like I am right now. And then as soon as they unkey, that signal goes away, and for just a brief second, as the power goes down, you hear, and then it gets squelched again. That's what the squelch does for you, so that you don't have to listen to all the time. Really handy little feature. Okay, we're getting close to the end. Does anybody have any questions, comments, suggestions, or toe jelly they'd like to talk to us about? Okay, I think that's about our time is about up. I want to say that this has been the NLA Hams Net. I'll try and get a little bit more prepared. This was kind of strange this week. I'll try and find something during the week that maybe we can look at that's a little more involved and goes directly to what ham radio is. This is NLA Hams Net. I am KI0RE, Terry, from Colorado. And this net is held every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Everyone is invited. We talk about NLA things and ham things. And mostly tonight, we did ham things because nobody wanted to talk about NLA or anything else. So without any further ado, I'm going to close the net, and I want to thank everyone that participated. I hope you have a great night. Every week, an announcement goes out about this net, and my phone number's on that. Anybody's welcome to call me at any time. The net is now closed. Thank you.